You are listening to the Retirement Wisdom Podcast, focusing on the changing nature of retirement today and the non-financial aspects of a successful retirement transition. Join host Joe Casey and learn from leading experts in the field and the stories of people who created interesting second acts as they share practical ideas and tips to create your own. Check out our website at retirementwisdom.com, where you can download our newsletter and other resources to learn more about how coaching can help you. The best way to support this podcast is to head over to Apple Podcasts and post a rating and a comment. It's easy and it's free. Join our conversations and get wiser about your retirement.
Welcome to the Retirement Wisdom Podcast. I'm your host, Joe Casey, and I'll be joined shortly by frequent co-host Dennis Wissman. Our guest today is a return guest, Melissa Davey. Melissa is a documentary filmmaker who lives in Valley Forge, Pennsylvania. She's a wife, mother, and a grandmother to three young boys. She's a world traveler and curious about everything unknown. And she recently retired after more than two decades from GenX Services Incorporated, the largest managed care case management organization in the U.S., where she was recruited to build and operate the company's Social Security Representation Division. Prior to GenX, Melissa had almost 20 years of diversified experience in the field of disability. She held senior leadership and management positions throughout her career. Melissa's second act is fueled by a lifelong passion for film and storytelling. If you didn't have the chance to hear our conversation with Melissa over 2 years ago, I'm sure you'll love to hear about her story today, and there are tons of lessons for all of us within. Melissa, thanks so much for joining us again.
Thank you.
So I must tell you, I've told your story to so many people whenever I'm asked, what are the best stories you've heard on your podcast from your guests? So for listeners who haven't heard our first conversation with you 2 years ago, could you please tell us a story of how you created a second act as a documentary filmmaker?
Yes, sure. I will go back a few years and 2014, and that's at a time when I had a lengthy career as a vice president in a large national corporation, and I had been in that for almost 25 years, and I was starting to, you know, I was in my mid-60s and I was thinking about what am I going to do next? Our company was up for sale once again, being bought out once again by private equity. And I was at a juncture where I had to decide, do I want to sign up for another 5 years and reinvest money again and do this forever and ever? And with that looming kind of feeling about dying at my desk. It was something I never wanted to do. So I was really taking a stock in the inventory of my life and taking a look at the calendar, deciding what to do with work. And I think a natural process for most people is to look at where you have been, what you have done, and where you are headed. And at that point, it was, what am I going to do next? Am I going to do this forever? And like I said, potentially die at my desk? Or am I going to really take stock in what it is that I haven't done and figure out why I haven't done that? So that's what I began to do. And like I said, I was in my mid-60s and I started to look at all of those creative types of things that I wished I had done, but I hadn't. One was to play a saxophone, but I read no music. So I thought, well, that might not work out too well. But the one that kept coming back to me, and there were a number of them, was filmmaking. I was very interested in film. I always have been. And I thought, well, geez, you know, maybe I should have just done something with that. And I thought about it in not a very organized way. I was just saying, I love film. I wish that I could be on a movie set or work in film, not be an actress, but make a film, do, you know, work behind the scenes in creating a film. And that was always like bubbling. And then in March of 2014, I tell this story because it's an important piece. I was down in Washington, D.C. at a congressional meeting for Social Security benefits. And that was my area of expertise, Social Security, disability, not necessarily retirement. And I was there and I'd been doing work in D.C. for many, many years, trying to improve the system, et cetera. And I just remember getting this feeling like, my gosh, it was like Groundhog Day. I'd been to the same meeting year in and year out with no great changes and no possibility of real change on the horizon. And I remember that frustrated feeling of, I can't stand this anymore. I don't want to do this anymore. And at the end of my meeting, I could have stayed, but I said, no, I'm going to go home. So early in the day, I came back up to Pennsylvania from DC. And instead of going back to work, I decided to take the day off to clear my head and rid myself of what I had witnessed once again down in Congress. And I called a friend of mine who I hadn't seen in a while, and she suggested that we get together for lunch. And that led to us picking up her daughter from school in Chester County and taking her to the afternoon horse barn session. So we were in the car. It was a great day. It was warm, but cloudy and kind of spooky looking sky. And it was just great to not be at work and great to be with a friend. And we were driving up this dirt road to take Grace to her horse barn. And my friend said, hey, you know what? I come up here every day and I look over there. I think they're making a movie. And I looked over and yeah, there were lights and cameras and whiteboards and all kinds of things out there that resembled somebody making a film. And so we dropped off Grace, turned around, came back and sat and looked at this scene. And I said to my friend, I said, I bet I know who it is. And she was like, how could you know who's making a film in the middle of the woods? And there, you know, we were sitting in front of this craggly looking long driveway, craggly trees, dark sky coming down. And it looked really spooky leading up to this old decrepit farmhouse. And I said, it's got to be M. Night Shyamalan because he lives here and he makes films here. So I opened up my iPhone and went to his website and boom, up pops this picture that I am now sitting in front of. So he had taken a picture of this long driveway with the craggly trees leading up to this spooky looking farmhouse. And the headline was M. Night Shyamalan's making a micro budget film in Chester County, Pennsylvania. So there we were. And I said, how do you like that? And my friend was astonished that I would be able to figure it out. But again, I'm a film buff, so I know his films and I know that he's close by and it kind of made sense to me. So she kept saying, you should go say hello. And I said, no. You don't go bother people while they're filming. But I did notice on his website that there was a little red button that said Charity Buzz. And I'd never seen that before. So I hit it and up comes M. Night's face and it says, win a day on the set with M. Night Shyamalan. And the proceeds would go to his educational foundation, the M. Night Shyamalan Foundation. So we were reading about the foundation and, you know, we're sitting there laughing that all of this is happening. And I said, well, you know, she said, you have to do it. You have to try to win this. You would love it. And so she was right. And I started bidding and I was bidding against a dentist in New Jersey. And this went on for over a week. And frankly, at one point, it was getting kind of pricey. And I thought I should tell my husband that I was, by the way, I'm bidding on this day on the set with M. Night Shyamalan. And he kind of giggled and laughed and said, well, if that's what you want to do with your money, I guess that's okay. But I had this, you know, feeling that it was a really good thing to do, because if I did win, the money or any money that I was putting in there anyway would go to the foundation. So long story short, I won and I got the call that I would be spending a day at the 30th Street Amtrak station with M. Night Shyamalan and his cast in the movie The Visit. And he was doing a scene that took all day. And when I say all day, it's more than a 10-hour proposition to do a day on the set. So I showed up in the dark and went home in the dark. And that was the day that it hit me that, oh my God, this is an amazing process. He had me behind the camera with him every step of the way. I figured I would be sitting in a corner. He was gaining money for his foundation and he would have this woman sitting in a chair watching him. But no, he was hands-on, get behind the camera with me, let me explain what I'm doing, why I did it this way. We did a more than two hour round trip train sequence where we were on an Amtrak train to Harrisburg and back so that we could get a specific scene. And it was just fascinating. And I fell in love with the process. And when we came back and we sat down for lunch, he said to me, "What do you do?" And I was trying to very quickly explain risk management and Social Security disability services for the insurance industry. Really kind of a tricky thing to try to do to explain that to a filmmaker. And he looked at me curiously with kind of this twinkle in his eye, and he said, "What do you really want to do?" And my immediate response was, "Well, I want your job." And his immediate response was, "Well, you better hurry up." So that was March of 2014. And again, to shorten the story, I went home. I told my husband I was going to quit my job and become a filmmaker, and then went to work the next day and told my CEO that I would be giving him a very long notice in order to be able to mentor and bring on someone to take over the side of the business. And I would give him at least a year. So on that day, I started in my head what would begin to be the Beyond 60 project. I thought, honestly, that if I was to do a film, that it needed to be related to something that I could relate to, that I understood and that held interest for me. And the most relatable thing was my age, and that I was full retirement age. And one of the best things I could probably do is go out and find other people, other women my age, to highlight their resilience and their continued relevance as they age. So that was my hope, that I would be able to pull together, before I walked out the door from my job, a film on paper anyway, that would be a documentary interviewing various women from around the country who I could relate to, and that I thought other people would find not only interesting, but inspirational. So that was the beginning of the Beyond 60 project.
Such a great story. And I'm curious about the lessons. What are some of the key lessons you've taken away from the people you met in the film and the whole experience of making it?
Yeah, the experience was unbelievable. Whenever you do anything which gets into the psyche of another human by interviewing them, talking with them, you're also able to reflect that back on yourself. And which is something that I, as I got older, I did that all the time through my travels, through my conversations with people. It was constantly looking back at myself, at how I viewed things, how I felt about things, how I felt about other people and how they felt about things, always trying to reconcile and understand better myself through understanding other people. So this allowed me to do that. And one of the key lessons that I learned was really confirming that resilience is real and it comes with living life and stepping out of the box that may have been constructed for you or that you may have constructed for yourself. All of the women, and there were, you know, 9 women that I interviewed in the film, showed great resilience, and that they, you know, they came through all types of life experiences. And lots of, you know, we all had failures too. They had failures. I had failures. We all have failures. And sometimes that leads to our greatest resilience, I think. And another thing that I took away was taking risks are one of the most important ingredients in life. If we don't take risks to step out of the boxes that we construct for ourselves, we don't experience new things that may challenge us and may change the way we view life, people, ourselves, etc. So in order for growth to occur, I think we need to take risks. And I certainly heard that from all of the women that I spoke with. And in retrospect, I look at my own life and I do see that the risks I took, and I took many, some calculated, some just happened, they paid off. No matter how uncomfortable they were, or if you wanted to categorize them as right and wrong, no matter how wrong they were, they all paid off. And they all led to this self, you know, this resilience that I think we don't really recognize until we're a bit older.
And it also requires looking ahead a little bit, because you, as you mentioned, there's always sacrifice involved in taking risks, but you've got to get past the comfort zone. You've got to get past that sense of complacency.
Yeah, absolutely.
So one thing I noticed about your film and your story about making it is that it was multi-generational in terms of the process. What are the benefits and some of the challenges that you saw in an intergenerational creative team?
It, throughout my career, I have always worked in multi-generational teams, and I have always gathered my teams that way so that I had a balance of people with lots of experience and a balance of people with no experience to mid-level experience, because you're always looking for people within your team that can move forward and move up and eventually maybe take over for you. But one of the benefits that I have found is that, honestly, working with younger people is 90% positive. And I say that because I'm always looking for balanced creativity around me. And I'd say that there are 10% challenges. And for me personally, the 10% challenge comes from my age, my experience, and my sometimes lack of patience. As I got older and more secure in what it is I felt I could do and do well, my patience was kind of short. I would just want to bomb through the project and do it the way I knew it should be done, because it will be done right and it will be done effectively and quickly. Now, if I have younger counterparts on my team who are just learning the ropes and learning all of the positives and negatives of any team effort that we're working on, they're going to be maybe slower in their responses or their risk taking. And I watch this not only in my corporate job, but also in filmmaking. And in filmmaking, even though I was the oldest person in the room, I was working with 20 and 30 something people, I was the newbie. So I was learning from the young people about the cameras, about the sound, about the lighting, and about the editing. I knew what my vision was as a director and what I wanted to get out of this process and what I wanted to see as an end result, which would be a film. I was learning from them. They were learning from me about older generational issues and how to work with an older woman. And I was learning from them the actual technical aspects of how this would be done. And not only that, I also learned from them just how bright they are and how much brighter in their 20s and 30s they seem to me than I was in my 20s and 30s. So it's a real interesting mix. And I don't think I would have done it differently. And I would certainly, in the next film that I do, pursue an opportunity to have a team of filmmakers who spanned all age groups, because you get a much more balanced presentation, I believe, that way. And one of the things that I decided to do, which was actually pushed by one of the younger producers, was to bookend my film with young people. So the film, as I explained, is about women over the age of 60, but we bookend some interviews with 20-something women from Philadelphia at the very front of the film and the very end of the film to get their perspectives on aging and what did they think about it, or did they think about it at all? And what kinds of messaging were they hearing from older women, and what would they like to hear? So I thought at the beginning, I didn't know if it would work, but at the end, I think it worked very well. And it just gave me that clear indication that multi-generational or intergenerational work is really important, no matter what the job is. It's really important to find that life balance where you can mentor others, but in turn, they can mentor you as an older person in what's going on in their younger world, because it's a lot different than when we were younger.
Tony, I had noticed the book ending that you had done when I had seen the film last year. The way you made the connection between the generations to allow people to really appreciate the fact that, hey, at one point, all these people on the film, including you, including us, right? We were all that age at one point in time. And just to be able to put that connection together, I thought was genius. I really enjoyed that part because the storytelling that was going on with the people over age 60 was just great. And then you gave people a chance to reflect on that at a younger age. So yeah, for those that haven't seen that, I remember that jumped out at me. It was just really powerful.
Oh, thank you.
So since we last spoke, I think the world's changed just a little bit.
Yeah.
When you think about the film, what's a story or even two about women you profiled that resonate with you even more today after all we've been through?
Well, I am in total agreement with you that the world has changed. Boy, oh boy. Yeah. Who knew that we would be sitting here the way we are today with all that's going on around us? But reflecting back on people's lives and looking at their stories and thinking about what it was like to interview them a few years ago. And then the ones that they all still resonate to me, but I will pick a couple. And one of them is Pat. Pat was the oldest woman in her mid 80s at the time when I interviewed her. And she was the creative director and the secretary for the Palms, the Sun City Palms, the cheerleading group. And Pat was an amazing woman. When I sat with her and I spent a full day with her, she explained to me that she had stage 4 cancer and she'd had it for a while. And, you know, she was very, very candid about her time being short and dying soon. And she asked the camera, really, she said, I wonder what it's like dying. I wonder what it's going to feel like in the days or the hours before I die. But, and then she perked up with this big smile and she said, but I'm not afraid at all. And she said, and the reason is because I've had such a great life and her life was so full. And I just think about the side conversations that I had with her during that day that I spent with her and just how she said some things and just her presence made me feel differently about dying. And I spoke with her about 2 months before she passed away. She did pass away last year. And she was still going to work every day, meaning she was sometimes not feeling well, but she felt if you got up, even if you were sick with stage 4 cancer, if you could get up and you had a purpose that day, and you could take the medications that made you able to do that, to get up and be aware and move about, that's what you should do, that you should work up until you can't work at all. And she was clear that that's what made her last as long as she did, because her physicians kept saying that she should have passed away years before. So her resilience was amazing to me. And I will remember our last phone call and remember how positive she seemed about her final days on earth and her contributions. So that was a huge memory for me. It's hard to describe how somebody like that can be so positive at the end of their life and make you feel so positive when you still have all these years left, I'm hoping, but I want to look at them the way that Pat looked at hers. So that was one. The other example is Susan Bennett, the voice of Siri. And the time that I spent with her, it was so much fun. She and I have a lot in common. We love music and she's actually a musician and she started a band and she's just an amazing, fun person. But what I learned from her is that she is an extreme introvert. And she talks about, in the film, she talks about holing herself up in her home studio that she had built to do her voiceover work. And realizing she never really had to go outside. She didn't have to go out. She didn't have to mingle with crowds of people. And that's not what she wanted to do. She told me a story about a group coming to her saying, oh, we have this exercise group, you might want to come. And she was like, knowing that she's an introvert and that that's not really what would make her happy. She did it reluctantly, but she was much happier just being inside. And she started thinking about why would that be? Why would she be happier by herself than with lots of people? So, you know, you do the work to find out why we are the way we are. And it usually heads back to the way we were brought up or something that occurred. But anyway, when she revealed that she was the voice of Siri, and when you get to watch the film, you will find out that she really didn't even know that she was ever going to be the voice of Siri. It's a rather interesting story. She was kind of pushed into the limelight for a little while. There was a period in time where she thought, I'm not even going to say that I'm the voice of Siri because then I'm going to have to get out there and talk about it. But, you know, people prompted her to think about that. So she did, and she did get out there. And before you knew it, she was in front of the camera talking about what that experience was like and how it really happened, because there were probably many assumptions about who the voice of Siri is or was at the time, and that they might have auditioned for that job. Well, that's not what happened at all. So she talked in detail about what it was like being pushed out in front of people and having her voice now relate to a human. She is this woman who is over the age of 60, now over the age of 70. And just that it was kind of this normalizing event for her to see that, oh gosh, I can actually do this. I can start to build on my confidence and I can get out there. And even though I'm old, and even though people may have their opinions as to who I am or what I look like or how old I am, it doesn't matter. It's my voice that matters, and my voice can send messages to many different people. So from that, she is now, since I met with her, she has begun to travel the world. And I mean, places like Croatia and all over Europe, speaking at international conferences, something she never would have done before she had made that reveal, and something that she never would have thought about at this age. So I think her story of resilience and risk taking is right there. And I admire her for it. And her band is up and running again. So she's playing music on the weekends in the Atlanta area. She's an amazing woman. And that's just an example again of maybe I should take this risk and maybe it will be worth all the anxiety that it causes because it will take me to a new result and a new opportunity.
So, Melissa, how has your life changed since the release of the Beyond 60 project?
I mean, it hasn't changed that much. I mean, I've gotten older, you know, 7 decades now strong. So I've moved forward on the calendar. And I saw Beyond 60 as a test for myself. I saw it as a test to see if I truly had it in me to do something completely different and of more interest to me than what I had been doing for decades. So I confirmed what it has done is given me confirmation that I can do that which has prompted me to grow. I can take risks. I can still take risks. I can still take detours and I can still grow, even though I may be 70 years old, that it's nothing more than a number. And all the messaging around ages and numbers they're meaningless. They don't mean anything. If you have the health and the ability to move forward, you certainly can do that. And that Beyond 60 has been that test for me. And it's been a great revelation, I suppose. I think I knew it, but I needed the confirmation, and that's what it's done. It has given me confirmation that I'm not done yet, and I hope I'm not done yet for a very long time. And like Pat said in Beyond 60, if you can get up, no matter what your aches and pains are or what your illnesses are, if you can get up and have a vision of what you want to do that day, and get it done and grow from that experience, you will be better off for it. So that's, I suppose, what has changed is the confirmation that I now know there's more that I can do.
You've certainly passed the test, Melissa. So, and those are great words to live by. That's for sure. It is only a number, right? That's great.
Yeah.
So talking about your life today a little bit, and I know you're a grandparent, as am I.
Yeah.
Curious, what's it like to be a grandparent during these COVID times? And what advice would you have for other grandparents like myself during this challenging time?
Yeah, grandparenting during COVID, boy, it's an adjustment for sure.
Yeah,
I'm close with each of my three grandsons, and being a part of their lives is very important to me. But I will say, given their age, I did have had some adjustment trials pre-COVID. And when I say adjustment trials, I mean it is related to their age. The first one being my youngest grandson, who's almost, is he almost 10 or 11? Gee whiz. Anyway,
uh-oh.
Almost 11. Oh.
Make sure you get the birthday right. Make sure you get the
birthday. Yeah, I know. Isn't that awful? But anyway, he and his family, my daughter and her family, moved to Vermont a year ago, August. So they took the youngest grandson from us and moved him a 7-hour drive away. So that was like a pre-COVID adjustment scenario for me, because we saw him on a very regular basis. You know, we would sit for him, we would have him for sleepovers, we would go on little day trips with him, etc. So that was changed, and it was uncomfortable because he wasn't there at the taking, at the wanting. But we learned how to visit him on a regular basis. We can drive to Vermont. It is only 6 to 7 hours. And we planned trips to see him. And we planned more time on phone or Zoom or whatever connection we could have with him to make sure that we stayed connected. So that adjustment didn't feel good in the beginning, like any adjustment, but we got used to it. And then when COVID hit, it just became more pronounced. We couldn't just get in the car and go see him. So there had to be a connection. And with Owen, the youngest one in Vermont, I did some Zoom reading with him. I've done a lot of that online with him. My husband does a weekly online game of Roblox with him so that we stay connected and we keep talking with him. Now, the other two are closer by. They're within 40-minute drive from where we live, and they are the older two, 12 and 15. So again, adjustments happen when they're babies. We're with them much more often because we're helping the parents by babysitting and whatever care we can give, and they aren't in school, so you spend more time with them outside and doing, you know, really cool things with them. Then school age hits, and then we fast forward to teenagehood, and there is an automatic adjustment there in the amount of time that we would see them, because they have their friends and their sports and their school, and they're learning how to become adults away from their parents and grandparents. So they don't rely on you or need you as much as they did when they were younger. So we sort of had an adjustment period there, although we stayed close with them in adjusted ways. And then COVID hit, and we couldn't just get together with them without masks and worrying about who have they been with and have those people been quarantined. And so there's a whole set of new rules now with the older kids. But I found that our main way of communicating is through text and phone. And that is what's comfortable with teenagers. And I love the fact that if I want to, I can text them daily or weekly or whatever is happening to talk with them about a specific issue, to share some information with them, to just tell a joke, but to let them know that we're here and we know that this stinks and we know that they're at home schooling and they're not able to go to school. And we know that that brings with it some anxieties. And I think just keeping those communications open with them to allow them the opportunity to reach out to you. And for example, last night I was sitting here doing a 1,000-piece puzzle, another one. This is the third one I've done in semi-quarantine. And my oldest grandson texted me and he said, "Hey, Grammy, if it's okay with my parents, can I come over this week?" And I don't know what prompted him to reach out, but my immediate response was, "Of course, you can come whenever you want." And to get that from a 15 and a half year old is a sign that they're still feeling connected. So I, you know, my recommendation is for anybody with teenage grandchildren is texting seems to keep them connected, and to give them the space and the opportunity to talk with you about what their fears are without any kind of judgment. And that's what I've tried to do with the two older boys, is let them know that, you know, we're here, we miss you, we love you, and we want to hear what you're thinking. So it's just maintaining those connections however you can. Zoom is great. A lot of people use Zoom, but it's different. I mean, don't you think, Dennis? It just feels so different.
It's extremely different. And I have much younger grandchildren. But yeah, it's a little complicated. And we're at the point where I was telling somebody else this, that, you know, we were doing hip hugs because we didn't want to get them to jump on, you know, they always jump on your back. Or they, I got
right.
And when we wear masks, they'd be like, you know, can you take the masks off? It's awkward. They're learning how to adapt to it. I'm not sure what they take away from this. I guess as time will tell. But we hope it's over quickly. But I'm with you. Staying connected, showing that you love them. The simpler things at any age. I'm sure it gets more complicated when they get older.
Yeah.
But at the age where you can just continue to be there with them in their space at that time is the rule that I live by. Be with, present with them.
Sure, sure.
For me, that's what it's about. It's just focused and present. But yeah, it's a hard time. But with great perspectives. Thank you so much for sharing those, Melissa.
I feel like I'm interrupting now. I'm going to put my mask back on and jump in and gears to a different.
You're allowed. There you go, Joe.
Different topic, if I could. But that was great advice. Hope to use it someday. So, for people listening who may want to pursue a second act, what advice would you give them, Melissa?
Well, I don't want to sound cavalier, but the advice would be do it, because there's only so much time that we all have. We're only on the earth for a certain period of time. And not all of that time may be healthy, or we may not be able all of the time that we're on the earth. So we have to take that time where we are able and where we can look back on what it is that we've chosen to do and what it is that we still would like to do. And I think we need to take that seriously. I think people need to not discount dreams. And I think a lot of times messaging when we were growing up was, oh, that doesn't make sense. You go to college, you get a job, a career, and you build that, and that's what you do. Where people might have other artistic dreams or any type of dream that might be poo-pooed by either family members or society in general. I think that we should not ignore that. And I think that we should especially not ignore that as we get older, because of the calendar, because we only have so much time left. And in that time, what do we want to accomplish? Now, some people may be very happy to say, look, I broke my back working for 45, 50 years, whatever it may be, and I'm ready to sit down and relax and know that each day I don't have to do anything, and that's okay. I think that's great. But what I have found is that there are huge numbers of people in their 60s and 70s who are finishing careers, or maybe even already a second career, and are saying, okay, I'm done with that. I don't want to work at that pace. I don't want to work possibly for another individual or a big corporation or whatever it might be. I want to do something meaningful for me that will also benefit others. And I think That's what I'm hearing all the time. What can I do to keep going, but improve upon myself? And one of the greatest things we can do is try something new and something that might impact others in a positive way. So, I mean, I think if people are afraid of making that choice, I think that there are certain things that they can do both financially and from an inventory idea to sit down and truly flesh them out and say what is reasonable and what is not. But to leave the earth with lots of unfinished business, I think would be a sad thing. And Pat taught me that. She encouraged me to keep going and to do another film and think of new ways of showing what it is that older people can do, because it's really important. You inspire people. That's what she told me. She said, continue to inspire people. And there's many ways of doing that. And I think that when people are getting ready for their second and third and fourth acts in life, that's what they're looking. They're looking to inspire themselves and others around them with whatever it is that they might do. So I just encourage people to not let their fear take over, to not listen to that little person in their head saying, you can't do this, you're too old. And just totally ignore that and go find people that you can talk to that will support you and that will help you with your ideas, because we're just not done yet. And just think about all of these people who are my age and older who are going out and creating new ideas, new things that are inspiring other people. It's awesome. And I want to see everybody doing it. And I certainly want to support those people that are doing it. So I, you know, I always say to people, get in touch with me if you ever want to hear more about my story, because I am an ordinary average citizen. And there are things that I have done that were difficult to do, but I did them. So I would love to help people see that potential as well.
Well said. And Melissa, do you have time for one last question?
Sure.
So what's next for you?
Well, funny you should ask, because right now I have a legal agreement in front of me that I hope I can figure out this afternoon with my attorney. And it is for a sales agent out in LA to come on board to sell the Beyond 60 project. So I'm hoping that I get to put that to rest soon, because COVID kind of put a damper on my activities earlier in the year around selling this and getting it off the table, so to speak. So hopefully that will happen and we will see this moving along, because I have already started to do some research and some scripting around the next documentary that I would like to do. And I haven't decided exactly yet what it will be, but it will be inspirational. And that's where I am. I hope to do a second film starting in 2020. I do now know that it's going to take me more than a year to do it. So that's a realization that is good to have in my back pocket. If you remember the first time we spoke, I had said that I thought Beyond 60 would take a year. Well, it took three. So I am stepping out to do another film, and I am still contemplating whether or not I should even think about doing a step into the music world and trying to learn how to play the saxophone. So that's where I am right now.
I think you should do that. I think you're worthy. Pick up that sax.
Oh. Well, Melissa, thanks so much for sharing all your insights. Great to talk to you once again, and certainly another inspiring episode for us and for everyone listening.
Well, thank you so much. I really, really appreciate it. It's great to talk to you both.
Thanks, Melissa.
Stay healthy.
You too.
Thanks. You too. Thanks.
Well, that was a fun conversation today with Melissa Davey. Melissa is one of our returning guests, and she really filled us in on a lot of what's been going on with her life, which was great. Joe, what were your reflections on today?
Well, it was great to talk with her again, to hear her story again. It's a compelling story, in my opinion. And I really was struck by her comments about tuning into what you really want to do. And later she talked about really the advice of don't discount dreams. Not really something to ignore. There's telling you something, drawing you towards something, and often something that can inspire others as well. And then secondly, she highlighted that growth, personal growth, learning always involves risk and involves stepping outside the box. She made the point that sometimes those boxes are created by ourselves and to really push the envelope. And it reminded me of something that you had highlighted in an off-air conversation about her first conversation with us. And she really gave the advice about always take the detour. And that stepping out of the box, I think, is a really useful thing to keep in mind. And finally, we had a conversation about the intergenerational aspects of things. And she really highlighted that often multi-generational teams are of mutual benefit. Often, sometimes people think of mentoring as one way, but it's really mutual learning. And to really think of that, especially with some of the negative things that are out there, chatter about OK Boomer, et cetera, et cetera. I think COVID has helped bring generations together and people are beginning to see the collaboration as very, very beneficial. How about you?
Well, I'm glad you mentioned the part about the risk taking, because for her, she mentioned that risk did pay off for her. And sure, they were filled with their stresses and everything, but it helped her grow. So I think that was a great point. Two things, the power of storytelling. I mean, the Beyond 60 Project was a series of stories. And she had mentioned how important it was for her that it helped understand herself better through other people. So one of the messages that I got today was communicating and socializing and dealing with other people is one better way of becoming more introspective. And the second point that popped out of me was that she talked to a lot of people in their 60s and 70s who really might want to do something else. So Joe, you talked a little bit about the growing and the taking the risk, and they might not necessarily want to stay in the particular career that they were in, but it's a time for them to really think about what they want to do that is meaningful to them and that also benefits others. And to me, that's the definition of purpose in a lot of ways. And the lady she mentioned who had passed away, Pat, who really had an influence on Melissa, it seemed, a very powerful influence on her. She was leading her life like that right up to the day she passed away, where she had a reason to get up in the morning and deal with her issues, but she had a purpose that drove her, something meaningful to her and that was helping others. So, hey, these are great messages here, great life messages, real things, and hope everybody enjoyed it today. I know I did.
A lot of great points and a lot of great stories as well. So thank you all for listening to the Retirement Wisdom Podcast.
Thank you for joining us today on the Retirement Wisdom Podcast. You can listen to all episodes of our podcast by subscribing to them on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher, or on our website at retirementwisdom.com.